Adventures in Research.
I consider it not only unconstitutional, but beneath the dignity of the United States to accept benefits from a foreigner.
I am of the opinion that this gift should be accepted in the spirit in which it is offered.
This is Paul Shannon introducing another in the series of programs dealing with the thrilling adventures to be found in the field of scientific research, as told by the men of science themselves. Today's story by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories, is titled Uncle Sam's Attic, storage place extraordinary in the history of scientific knowledge and invention. You know, children have a habit of asking some very embarrassing questions sometimes. Questions that are mighty hard to answer. But once in a while, a question comes along. And what a grand feeling it is to be able not only to answer it correctly, but to be able to fill in all the details. Just like the other day when my son came up to me waving a letter.
Hey, Dad, Dad, here's a letter for you. And can I have the stamp for my collection, can I?
Why, sure you can. What stamp is it?
Oh, I don't know, but it's pretty. New, too. Has a big building on it, see?
Mm-hmm. Look, and see what it says. Just above the picture of the building. Read it.
For the increase and
Diffusion. Means to spread or circulate.
Oh, diffusion of knowledge among men.
Uh-huh. And do you see what the name of the building is under the picture? The Smithsonian Institution, 1946.
Does that mean it's just been built, Dad?
No, son. It means that the Smithsonian Institution is 100 years old. This stamp is commemorating its 100th birthday. There's a lot of history behind that stamp, son. Here, sit down beside me and I'll tell you what I know of the story. And maybe that stamp will mean more to you.
Okay, Dad.
To start this story at the beginning, we have to go back to the year 1829, when a British chemist, mineralogist, and author of many scientific writings on philosophy made his last will and testament.
Read back to me what we have so far.
I, James Smithson, do hereby bequeath my estates and fortunes to my nephew, Henry James Hungerford.
Good. Now, I have a stipulation to add. Should my nephew die without children, the whole of my estates and fortunes shall go to the United States of America to found at Washington, under the name of the Smithsonian Institution, an establishment for the increase and diffusion of knowledge among men.
But, sire, such a bequest is most unusual.
My friend, I am a lonely and unhappy man. True, I was born through great wealth. The best blood in England flows in my veins. I am related to kings. And yet, what does it avail me? My name is buried among the titles of my illustrious forebears. I intend that my fortunes shall do good for all men, and my name kept alive through such an establishment as I have named. Thus it shall read and be carried out.
James Smithson died that same year, 1829. His estates went to his nephew as willed. But 6 years later, in 1835, Henry James Hungerford died, leaving no children behind him. When news of the bequest, amounting to about $500,000, reached the United States, it was received with surprise, doubt, and bitter opposition.
What do you think of the news about the Englishman giving us more than £104,000 as a gift?
If you want my opinion, I'd say we ought to be mighty careful about accepting it.
Why?
Why? Because there's a catch in it somewhere, that's why. You can bet your boots on that. Nobody gives a fortune away for nothing.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I don't agree with you. The man wants his money to do some good in the world. That's all there is to it.
Then why did he leave all that money to the United States? Why didn't he give it to his own country? Answer me that.
Well, I can't answer it, but... Well, maybe he figured the United States would one day become the scientific capital of the whole world. That'd be a good enough reason.
Well, we can talk all we want, but it's up to the Congress to make the decision as to whether we'll accept the money or not. I'm like Sam here. I think there's a catch in it somewhere.
Yes, and that's what Congress will think, too. You wait and see.
The opinions of the man on the street were echoed and re-echoed throughout the halls of Congress, where the question of accepting or refusing the gift was debated at great length.
Mr. Speaker, Senator John Calhoun of South Carolina, it has been established beyond the shadow of a doubt that this Britisher, James Smithson, has never at any time during his life been a visitor to our shores. And furthermore, has no kith or kin residing in America. And yet this man, in his last will and testament, bequeaths to our country the sum of more than $500,000 for the purpose of establishing here in a strange land a scientific institution.
It certainly seems that there must be...
To my mind, gentlemen, the acceptance of this bequest would be not only unconstitutional, but beneath the dignity of the United States to accept benefits from a foreigner. In conclusion, I hold that this Congress has no power under the Constitution to accept such a gift.
It has been said that the acceptance of this gift would lower the dignity and prestige of our country. With this, I cannot agree. It is my earnest, considered opinion that the purpose of this bequest, the establishment of an institution that will benefit all mankind, far transcends any affront, real or imaginary, to our dignity. I, for one, am all for taking this gift in the spirit in which it is offered.
It was largely through the efforts of John Quincy Adams and Jefferson Davis that the gift was finally accepted, and in September of 1838, the Clipper Mediator delivered the money in gold sovereigns to the Philadelphia Mint. Then followed some 8 years of debate in Congress as to the disposition of the fund.
But, Dad, I thought you said it was to be used to establish the institution. That's what it was sent for.
Yes, but the debate centers around the type of establishment that should be created. Some thought this type, others thought that type. But eventually, agreement was reached.
It is hereby resolved that Congress shall accept this trust and shall create, by enactment, an establishment to be called the Smithsonian Institution, consisting of the President, the Vice President, the Chief Justice, and members of the President's Cabinet.
Said institution shall provide for a library
and for a museum, which is to contain objects of art and of foreign and curious research, and objects of natural history belonging to the United States.
It is also resolved that said institution shall be governed by a board of regents, in which shall be included 3 members of the Senate, 3 members of the House of Representatives, and 6 private citizens, 2 of them residents of the District of Columbia.
On September 7, 1846, the first meeting of the Board of Regents took place, and in the autumn of that same year, a most important post was filled.
The Board is unanimous in the selection as secretary of the Smithsonian Institution, and as such, an executive official of the institution, Professor Joseph Henry of Princeton University. Professor Henry's scientific experiments on the electromagnet and other subjects relating to electricity are well known to us all. And his election to the important post of secretary is, I think we will all agree, a most happy one.
Under the guidance of Joseph Henry, the institution took shape. Around that time, the great western areas of the United States were opening up and afforded a unique opportunity to study the Indian tribes, as well as the flora and fauna of the West. Steady progress followed, as year after year, improvements and important additions were made to man's fund of scientific knowledge.
1847. A plan to unify and systematize weather observation was adopted.
1849.
Telegraphic transmission of meteorological intelligence collected by the institution was begun.
1850.
A standard Smithsonian barometer was distributed.
1856.
Weather maps were successfully made.
1870.
The meteorological work of the institution was incorporated with the Signal Corps, independent of the institution.
1890.
The United States Weather Bureau was established by Act of Congress.
But, Dad, all that is just about the weather so far.
Well, that's true, son. But then the weather was a mighty important thing in those early days. Scientists were beginning to make serious studies of it through weather charts and systematic observation. So it was quite natural that the annual reports of the Smithsonian Institute covered a great deal of territory in the field of meteorology.
Uh-huh. Well, when did they start collecting things like, oh, Lindbergh's plane, the Spirit of St. Louis?
Well, that came years later. You see, it was in 1861 that an important transfer was made, an addition to the Smithsonian Institution that started it on its way collecting things.
Well, I see that quite a few changes are being made under the new secretary, Spencer Baird.
That's so? Say, where did this fellow Baird come from?
He was head of the United States National Museum. Practically developed it.
Built up around the collections of the Patent Office, wasn't it?
That's right. And now, according to this, the United States Patent Office collections and those of the National Institute are to be turned over to the Smithsonian Institution.
Man alive, what a collection that'll be. Why, all the material that's flowing into the Smithsonian Institution will cover almost every field of the arts and sciences.
Yes, and will come from all over the world, too. The system of international exchange of scientific literature alone is beginning already to pay dividends. And there's more, lots more to come.
Valuable archaeological material was gained from explorers.
Rare specimens of fish, birds,
great collections of plant life,
knowledge of the jungles, mountains, seas,
of humans, animals, insects,
information about industry, the arts, the sciences.
So you see, son, that stamp in your hand, commemorating the 100th birthday of the Smithsonian Institution, represents a vast accumulation of knowledge gathered through the years and held in trust for you and your children's children. Yes, the Smithsonian Institution's great store of knowledge belongs to all men, great and small alike, just as James Smithson intended it to be when he left his fortune to the United States of America, to found at Washington an establishment for the increase and diffusion of knowledge among men.
Gosh, thanks, Dad, for telling me about it. This stamp goes in a very special place in my stamp collection.
And that's today's story by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. Join us again next week for another interesting story by Dr. Thomas on Adventures in Research.